rest of the turnout go to the open house.
Well, we'd like to see more people. We could have several providers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they would come.
No district planners, nobody of that sort.
Well, that's good. We had some interest in providers wanting to see it, so that's good. That's good.
Well, that should be start. Okay, want to do the call order?
Glinkis?
Here.
Anderson?
Here.
Banks?
Here.
Colbert? Hodson?
Here.
And Emmanuel?
Here. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, approval of minutes, motion? Changes, yeah.
I move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Public participation. Public participation. Do you have any public participating?
Yeah, as always, I've got something to say. We've had numerous discussions about dietary services and related issues. And it's been stated numerous times that over the last 21 months that I've been involved in it, that, you know, nobody seems to know what's wrong, including me. So I had occasion to be in the area and poked around a little bit, and I have a memorandum here that I have a handout for you, basically. I'd rather not read it, just think about it. I'm not laying a claim to everything that is right, but I drew a sketch of the dining area, and if there's any questions, well, I'd be happy to answer them. I think answers may be somewhere between in the middle. And I think if we sit down and look at some of these issues, what I found, I thought, were fairly simplistic issues, not rocket science, and they're fixable. And for the most part, they don't cost any money. And that's something we want to do. And for the overall improvement of the life of the residents of this nursing home, I put this forth for your perusal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
I did want to say a couple of things. One being that I appreciate this county board, full county board, and I know that that meets in a different place, but also this committee that volunteers to overlook the nursing home for their voluntary participation as a resident. I do very much appreciate this building and all the people who look after me. I think it's an excellent facility. I think the people who work here are, for the most part, excellent. And I feel I'm taken very good care of. Now, I can advocate for myself, and that makes things a whole lot better for me than they are for a lot of people. The things I read in the News Gazette, I find pretty much off target. They make me angry. And I should write more letters to the editor. Excuse me, I'm not a good public speaker, which is why I don't speak. Dave stands up and speaks each month, but I don't. Anyway, I know the News Gazette's here tonight, and I wish he'd be more careful about how he speaks about the nursing home. I know he talked to Mr. Carter one week, And what he wrote down, I listened to him talking to Mr. Carter. And even that, he got a half-assed job. And I thought that that was, oh gosh, what we're reporting. I thought, how amateurish. But anyway, thanks for listening, and thanks for your service to this nursing home.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the participation. Communications. Does anybody have the Family Advisory Council sort of update?
Oh, you weren't there, were you?
Mm-mm.
Let's see. It was a long time ago.
Well, you don't have to tell me, Mary.
Well, we had the new Social Services Director and the Adult Daycare Director led the meeting. And I thought they'd, I think both gentlemen were there. Oh, no, maybe Mr. Lake. Yeah, Mr. Michael was there. And they both did a really nice job. I don't remember everything that was discussed, but primarily they talked about food service, and Mr. Laker, at that time, I don't know what he has here, but he was suggesting that one of our problems was that the carts held too many trays, and that slowed things down in the kitchen because they had to wait for a multi-level cart to be filled up before that cart could go to the dining room. And I think he's talking about carts with four levels, if I remember right. And he felt that if we purchased some shorter carts with that held fewer trays and just, you know, circulated them more frequently, that we could get the food to there at the dining rooms and the wings in a more timely manner and warmer and everything. I did, after that, come and observe on a Sunday, and it just so happened that, you know, when I was there, I think I saw one of the tall carts and two shorter ones in use in the two dining rooms where I observed. And I did make, I think I made Karen and Scott aware of those comments, and I don't think Scott felt that that was our primary issue, but I did pass that along.
So I think one of the things we can do is take the comments from that meeting and as well as this kind of input and sit down with management and kind of go through the suggestions and outside of the board meeting. Appreciate that.
Kelly, I think I remember hearing that there are minutes kept at those meetings or notes. I'm not saying
there are notes, and we've had them on occasion. They've been brought here. I mean, Mary's usually the one who's done that. Just out of
I did take notes. I couldn't find them this evening. And sometimes I've typed them up, but
no,
not
sure,
every
Mom.
Time.
She did do
minutes. As a former social worker did, but yeah. I don't know if that's last minute.
She did.
Oh, she did. Okay.
I thought I sent them to you.
You may have sent them to me. I don't remember.
But there usually is a staff person at those meetings, aren't there?
Yes.
Would it be like helpful if that person is kind of just responsible for taking them? Not anything.
Yeah,
really,
we do have minutes.
You do have those?
Yeah.
I think in the future I'll make sure that
they're here.
Yeah, minutes.
Yeah, because you're always asking what happened, and then it'd be nice just to have just highlights, that could just be reported that way.
Okay, anybody else have communications? Yes.
I just want to point out that this board is currently down one member, and we do not have applicants. The application is open. So if you know of anyone who you would encourage to serve on this board, you might want to do that. The area of expertise that would be given priority at this point is someone with a financial background, but certainly any candidates would be considered.
We both went to the same person in our head. Right?
Yeah,
okay. She's on another board.
She is. I did have a brief conversation with her. This is not for the discussion. We can talk about that after the board meeting. Yeah. Okay, so if people have suggestions, encourage people who have some financial background. I put a little caveat, especially healthcare financial background, if at all possible. And what's the, does it just stay open until it gets filled, or is there a deadline for applying?
Well, I think right now we just have it open.
Okay, okay. And they just go to the, they can do that on the county board website.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, yeah, that'd be good.
And also put out there, if they find someone that's interested, if they want to contact me, if they want more information about the home, I'd be more than happy to talk with them also.
Okay, good. Okay, perfect timing. About the contract for the lint filtration project, Dana, you want to talk with us about both that and then the fire damper project after that, one at a time?
Everybody.
We've got.
Have a chance to take a look at the two documents.
Yes, we got.
First one was ITB 2015-009 lint filtration. We bid that out, took bids, and so I'm asking for approval to move forward. We received three bids. We actually contacted seven locals and had three show up to our pre-bid meeting. Three good local companies and. You see the range on page two of the first document. You see the range of the bids between $187,500 to $149,490. So felt good about most of the bids. It's a wide range, but yet that's what people do. So
and a pretty big difference between one and the other two. And you don't think? I mean,
no.
You don't think there's any issue with that?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Now we actually followed up, had our engineer follow back with the company and review the bid document, reviewed their bid and what they had in it to ensure that it was a viable
That's bid. What you said,
and
yeah.
They can meet and our expectations to deliver the correct product.
People have questions for Dana? I got a motion?
I will. I move approval to accept the bid.
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Talk about fire dampers.
Yeah, the fire dampers. Again, hopefully everybody had a chance to read that. This came about here this fall with IDPH coming in and doing a life safety check. One of the faults we had was with regard to checking the fire dampers on an annual basis, or at least some percentage of them every year. Is it, Scott, is it 3 years or 4 years? I forget.
I think it was.
That's you're wrong.
It might have been every 5 years.
They need to be checked. I think it's every four.
Okay.
Part of our problem was at the time we thought there might be somewhere around 500 of them in the building. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough documentation as built drawings from when the building was constructed. That's probably due to the litigation that was ongoing as the building was being finished and the county never received the as builds, which has been a problem. We tried to backtrack with all of the subcontractors on the original construction project, both our office as well as GHR was assisting in this endeavor, went to the city to try and find. City of Urbana to try and find if they're ready as bills, what documentation they may have. With GHR's help, we were finally able to kind of piece it together, looking back through construction change orders, original documents, etc. GHR's put a bid document together that will service, will verify and service all of the fire dampers and or repair, replace, whatever needs to be done for each of the fire dampers. There's almost 1,000 of them in the building. Don't have an idea yet on the cost, but it's something that we have to do to keep our doors open. So we've got to move forward on it. We'll have a better idea, obviously, after the bids come back, what our true cost is. As for the future beyond that, you know, I would suggest that we take a look at doing something on an annual basis and maybe go 25% of the dampers. I think that would qualify on an annual basis, and we're taking care of business as we should be. So,
so So just as additional background, because it was found, identified on the survey that we had not done inspection of the fire dampers, we're now on a timeline to get it done. And so because of the extensive nature of reviewing all these dampers, we have requested a waiver with IDPA. So the date that you see there, you know, we want to get the inspections completed by April 15th, 2016. If for some reason we can't get all the dampers, all the inspections completed by then, we can request an additional waiver if necessary. And it's basically it's just a formality. But we do have to, at some point, get it completed and have IDPA sign off on that we have it done. So just remains to be seen.
So your recommendation is that you're just asking?
We're asking approval to bid it out. Yes.
So do you think we can meet the timeline?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You think if you bid it out now, you could get everything done by April?
And that actually is in the bid document that they've got to be done by our timeline, which is what Scott and group was able to negotiate with IDPH.
So just to cover the bases, we can request additional waivers without any negative impact on us with IDPH, but we want to get it done as soon as possible by April 15th. 16th deadline.
Do not feel there's not a safety issue around this?
Well, we don't believe that there's a safety issue. It is an IDPH requirement that they're checked every years. I'm pretty sure it's 4 years, but that's the violation. They do serve a purpose, certainly.
Yeah.
And it is a life safety issue, and that's just one of the things that we've got to do.
Good reason to move forward and make sure we get it done. Make sure that aren't happening. So,
So Sam, you move.
No.
And by second?
Yeah, I'll be at you.
Second.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thanks, Dana.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dana.
Thanks, Dana.
Okay, walk through the strategic objective metrics update, and maybe just touch on the things that, we'll only spend time on the ones that we are not meeting.
All right, so let's turn to page 12. And I will work next month on making the font on the dashboard larger. I have problems reading this after it's gotten printed out, so I apologize for that. So I'll see what I can do with the margins or something to get this to fit better on the page. That being said, if you take a look at the retention rate, you can see that the retention rate has gone down between September and October in all categories from all staff, nursing, and CNAs. And turnover rate is also moving in the incorrect direction for all job categories. So what I want to point out in October is we did have a high number of separations. House-wide, we had 16 separations. The biggest group was CNAs, where we had 7 separations. So without going into each one, we had a number of CNAs that quit. We were not able to get a hold of the CNA, so I can't tell you the specific reasons. 3 were on the probationary status, meaning that they had been employed at the facility for less than 6 months. So obviously that fits right into our biggest problem area, which is the 6 month or less new hires. So the other staff that we lost a couple of food service workers. In October, our ASME nursing unit had put a vote to all of the nurses to go to 12-hour shifts for all the nurses. So not in addition to the weekend-only option, the nurses had voted and had agreed to do 12-hour shifts 7 days a week. So right now, we have nurses that have been hired just to work 12 hours on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we also have nurses that are working 12 hours. And a lot of those actually only have to work Monday through Friday and not have to work the weekends. But because of that, we have lost two nurses in October and one in November who did not want to work 12-hour shifts. So we did have some attrition there.
So are they working 3 12s in a week, or how are you doing that? Okay, gotcha.
And just as a reminder, there's a reason you looked at 12-hour shifts. So it kind of gets you into what's your plan for full staffing and retention, and that was part of that, right?
Well, and the big issue is getting nurses on the weekends. So when we took a look at our agency usage, the weekends are always the higher usage of nurses, and with CNAs. And again, it's just the fact of the matter that because they're working every other weekend, we have less nurses that are available on the weekends. So we did the weekend-only option, which pays, if they agreed to work weekends only, they get paid an extra $2 an hour, plus the existing shift differentials that we have, which is 75 cents for working either the evening shift or the night shift. The other incentive is that for working 36 hours, you're going to get paid for 40 hours.
So it's a really good deal, really, for those people who can figure out their life needs to put in a 12-hour day. A lot of people might have structured around the 8-hour day and have to get home for other people in the family for dinner, but if you can do 3 12s, it's a really good deal for people. They make, especially if they're working on a weekend, more money. They get paid a full salary for 36 hours a week. So in the long run, it may work out really to your advantage, because once you get a cadre of people who are capable of dealing with a longer day, they'll probably see this as a positive thing, and it's common in healthcare now for the 3 12. I don't know, what do you think? What do you think about when you talk to candidates and interview them? Where do you think this is going to go?
They're looking for 12 hours,
yeah,
not eights. More time at home, more flexibility in their schedule, definitely.
That was really why you were looking at moving
right.
To it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything in particular with the two people who left that was kind of germane to their situations?
They were part-time. I assume they have other jobs. A lot of our people that work part-time have other positions and other healthcare settings.
And then from our standpoint, the other benefit from our standpoint is that, you know, in a 24-hour day, you just need two nurses instead of three nurses to cover that period. So with the same amount,
scheduling is a little easier.
Yeah, we can actually cover more shifts with the same number of individuals.
Scheduling's easy, but when someone calls in sick, it can become difficult
because
you've already got people. You can work a 16-hour shift, a double, but you can't work a
20. Yeah, you can't. So. Well, you can, but you can't.
Not too many people want to come in and work part of that either, so.
So you just said the turnover rate's going in the wrong direction, and so what are we
going to
do about that?
So I think the availability of the 12-hour shifts, I think, is going to help with retention on nurses. I mean, I think we'll get through this initial period of attrition with the nurses that weren't interested in the position. And I think with the nurses, we should see the turnover rate go down. With the CNAs, you know, we've got the ongoing preceptor program that's in place, and we're going to have to expand that because we've had one CNA preceptor go through that program. We're going to expand that to include additional CNA preceptors. And again, we're also building in a financial benefit for the preceptors who want to become preceptors. And the whole purpose was we were focusing on the orientation and onboarding process that we have to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make sure that we're giving these new hires the opportunity to be successful before we let them loose. So again, the revamping or the tweaking of the orientation process is still ongoing with all the preceptors that we have. So that process is still in the works, but I believe there's also been already benefits because of the work that we've done to date, but we wanted to continue to work on that as we move forward. If you take a look at the bottom of page 12, at the open positions, so again, with dietary, we are at full staffing. In November, we actually got up to 20 FTEs. Again, the goal was 19.65, and we were just a little bit short in September and October. With the CNAs, I want to point out that while the turnover rate is high, it remains to be high, I got to make sure I get these numbers right. So, the number of new CNA hires has gone up. So you can take a look at the hires in October. We had 7 CNAs hired. We had 9 hired in November. And in our first orientation class in December, we had 7.5 FTEs. So that's roughly, I can't remember the number of actual employees, 8 or 9 new CNAs that went through the first orientation class. And we're going to have probably 2 orientation classes in December. So so while we continue to try to work the turnover rate down, obviously the other part of the equation is to make sure that we're hiring more than we're losing. So we want what's coming in to remain high. At the same time, we're trying to reduce or eliminate the number of CNAs that are going out the door on a monthly basis.
In November, we've got our lowest number of CNA open positions that we've had for a few months.
Right, so we're up to 53.7 FTEs hired, and so our open positions have dropped from 36.1 FTEs in October down to 30.5 in November. So, and again, so far this month, we have had 1 CNA that has separated so far. So knock on wood, hopefully we won't have very many more of this than month. So we're starting off, more of this story is we're starting off the month looking pretty good.
Issue 2 is being supervision improvement. And I don't know if you have anything you want to say about that.
No, nothing. No, nothing of real substance to cover there. There were no updates to the CMS nursing home compare information.
And issue 3, quality of care. Okay.
Yes. So again, just to refresh your memory, with the Pinnacle survey scores, I have included calculation of the quarterly trends as well as the monthly reports that we have received in the past. And so on a monthly basis, we had 8 scores that improved between September and October. And I'm looking at page 20 right now, and then we have 8 scores that fell between September and October. So if you go to page 26, it's on the monthly side, you can see that nursing care did go up. Dining service and food, quality of food, we have competing trends here. Dining service actually went up from 3.29 to 3.44, but the food quality dropped from 3.39 to 2.94. Now, the caveat I'll make for all of this survey scoring in the month of October, the surveyor was only able to contact 11 contacts. And in regards to the dining service, we have 2 of the survey's recipients not provide any feedback on dining service because they were not familiar with the food service at the facility. So the dining, I know we had 1 or 2 scores that were very low, but that was 1 out of 2 out of 9. So
you know,
but the,
well, I just think that one deserves a little attention because everybody's Everybody's worried about food. Everybody's unhappy about that, and we didn't have an improved score.
So on the negative comments that we had in the October survey, the predominant complaint was on food temperatures. So I'm going to, one of the things that Karen has implemented is we have a dining committee that has been put together that has CNAs, representatives from CNAs, nursing, dietary departments, including management representatives. And the things that they're looking at, specifically what we believe that the majority of the complaints, for the most part, with the food temperatures seems to be with breakfast. And what they've identified the issue is that breakfast is the one meal time where the residents are not all coming to the dining room at once. It just depends on when they're getting up, that it's really spread out. But the tray preparation is happening all at once. So if I show up for the dining room later, my tray is already prepared. Who knows how long before I've shown up. So one of the things that the committee is going to be looking at is to have breakfast done on demand when I show up in the dining room. So when I get to the dining room, the ticket will then be sent to the kitchen and I'll have my breakfast made then. Because the other thing with breakfast foods are the hardest to maintain the temperature.
The other thing is, the other strategy you could theoretically consider is there might be a subpopulation that actually are predictably early arrivers, so you could sort of figure out a way to get their food up and ready, and you can almost anticipate their, you know, there obviously there are some people it's hard to get them out of bed, get them going in the morning, do some of the morning hygiene stuff, and get them to a meal. And those slow folk sort of, you know, basically you might want to do their meal a little bit later, because it's just going to be, if you do it all at once, their food is going to be sitting there a long, long period of time. So you might just look at your population. There probably are some that are early risers, you know, easy daycare, get out of the bed, get to breakfast, and then there are others that take forever.
So if you, Karen, you've been looking.
That is something they're looking at, and actually which units need to be served, you know, who's getting up earlier on which units.
Yeah.
So that's something they're taking into consideration.
So they're also looking at changing the meal times for each of the units that may be tweaked. The other thing they're looking at is actually changing the starting times for the dietary staff to try to get more people available at breakfast. Because we have a lot of overlap right now at the lunch meal service. They're also going to be looking at the cart orders, and they're also going to take a look at the cart size. So
yeah,
I did relay that back to them. So. Mr. Laker, so they're going to also take a look to see how they're filling the carts, but also they will be taking a look at maybe we should be using smaller carts too. So,
good suggestion.
So I think, and again, you know, with the committee members, I think the line staff have been, I think, very, very open and willing to dig into this problem. So I think collectively, everyone understands that this is an issue that we've got to solve. So,
right. So, I'm pretty sure I speak for the board, and we appreciate those efforts. Those seem like good ideas. We have to see some changes in the next couple of months. It's gotta see it turn it.
Karen, do you serve a lot of oatmeal type things at breakfast? That's really something you can keep hot right there on the spot. You know, they make these large oatmeal things,
right.
If you go, and that way it's always hot the minute, and, you know, you ladle it out and it's presented to the patient. It doesn't have to sit in a tray. So
there's probably more cold cereal that gets consumed than hot.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
So I think the other issue that's going to help is, again, we've got a much better, obviously better staffing in the dietary department. The turnover numbers, you know, are not being driven by food service anymore like they were, you know, earlier in the year. So we've gone through some attrition with the staff in the dietary department, and I think the overall feel and the culture within that dietary department is much different today than it was earlier in the year. So with this committee, coming up with ideas. We're going to hopefully start seeing some additional improvements to get us where we need to be.
Third issue is the medical management, which is some of the new programs.
Yeah, so the one thing I want to point out is
admissions.
So on page 32, the pulmonary clinic. So again, I mentioned before that we have a Dr. Sheik at the Christie Clinic who is interested in becoming our cardiopulmonary rehab coordinator. And so they have sent us a contract for review. We run it by our legal. We've got some changes to it, and that was just submitted to Christie last week. So hopefully we'll get that contract resolved before the end of the year, and then we can get Dr. Sheik moving forward with our cardiopulmonary program.
So we think January or February?
Hopefully in January. Okay. Readmission rate, on page 33 in November, we had 17%, one readmission out of six.
We talked about the Pinnacle survey scores, but two out of six
people
are
national.
No good. Not acceptable.
The five-star rating has not changed. We'll get another update in January.
We'll get it with our survey, but they have 75 days after it's finalized, and with the it may take a while.
And we believe that you've calculated that at the end of the year we'll have some points falling off. So
once the annual hits, it'll push.
And when is that?
The annual's done, but it has not been updated.
Oh,
to the five star yet.
All right. Which speaks to the
quality.
So issue four is food service. Would maybe talk about that.
I don't have anything else to add there.
He's got his four, but it's the biggest one.
Yeah. Issue five, resident services programming. Just update quickly on the outpatient therapy. So far, that seems to be going very well. Our current caseload is three, and they're all our adult daycare clients. And we've had four residents or clients, and actually residents of the facility, that have been discharged from the program to date. So, and again, we're just continuing to reinforce with the hospitals, with the managed care organizations that we have the outpatient program, also the VA. And it's just going to be that constant reminder that we have that program in place as we try to build that clientele. And again, what's our adult daycare census running?
It's averaging like 14 a day.
Yeah. So again, daycare, our average census is remaining higher than what it traditionally has been in previous years. So,
really,
and again, it's a niche because there's two adult daycare programs. One's a standalone, correct? And so we're the only nursing home that has an adult daycare program. So it's a niche that we've been marketing, especially to the managed care organizations. Now, obviously, Health Alliance Connect is going to go by the wayside on January 1st, but I've talked directly with Melina, and when we have a chance, Karen and Josh remind those caseworkers that we have the adult daycare program because we do have that service covered by Medicaid as well as private pay. So, and again, the outpatient therapy goes along with that. So if we have someone go to adult daycare, they can get rehab. Outpatient therapy is also something that we're promoting with our discharge Medicare patients. So if they go home and they still need additional rehab services, they can come back to us and they will be treated by the same therapist that they saw while they were in-house. So all of those things that we keep communicating to hopefully drive more business to Champaign County Nursing Home.
And issue six under contract management was really around making sure that we are up to date on contracts. I don't know if you you don't know that for today, but you should make sure that.
Yeah, we have a spreadsheet that lists all the contracts. We have gone through all of those to get business associates agreement, and we're going to continue to go through that as they expire to get those updated on a proactive basis.
And we just wanted to make sure that we bring them here before, more than like the day they need to be approved. Okay. Any questions on the issue update, strategic objectives update? Okay, want to do the financial report?
All right, so we'll start as we usually do with the census. So our October census averaged 172.5. November census will probably be just under 170. Right now, I calculate it's going to be 169.4. Our Medicare census in October was 10.5, and we'll probably show November's Medicare census is 10.4. So obviously, we've been going through this period of our census being low. Now, what I can tell you is that, just to give you a frame of reference, because obviously this is a concern for me, and it's obviously a concern for everyone else in terms of our census. And what I've said before is that hospital activity over the last few months has been slow. And census, is, with the feedback that we've gotten from the other area nursing homes, is down across the board with all the facilities. But just some additional statistics. So in our referrals, and I know I've said this before, continues to remain high. So in October, we had 49 referrals. In November, we had 40 referrals. And historically, we've averaged between 40 to 49 referrals per month. The problem has been the quality of the referrals, meaning that the referrals over the last few months, roughly half of them have been individuals who have had no payer source, or they were inappropriate for the facility. And that typically meant that they were young, typically well below the age of 60, had psychiatric or substance or alcohol abuse issues that would make them inappropriate for our resident population. So for example, in November, we had 40 referrals. I think we had accepted roughly about 14 of those. Of those 14, we had 12 actually admitted to the facility. But what I can tell you is so far through today, we've had 29 referrals through the 14th, so I have roughly halfway through the month. We have already had 15 admissions. So our census as of today is up to 180, and we have 14 Medicare residents, 9 of which are on Unit 4, our rehab unit. So just last week, we had 6 admissions. We had 9 referrals and 6 admissions over a 2-day period. So the hospital activity seems to be picking up. So hopefully, yeah, we'll just have to see how it looks, but things have definitely been picking up over the last couple of weeks. But getting back to October. Payer mix, I just want to show on page 45, that is the payer mix without the Medicaid conversion days. So our Medicaid in October is up to 61.2%. Private pay was down to 32.6%. Medicare was 6.1%, and we did not have any VA on an inpatient basis for the month of October. And again, the Medicaid payer mix is skewed because we were down to 172 residents. So the actual number of Medicaid residents really hasn't changed substantially. Again, you know, we have been pretty solid at averaging about 105 to 110 Medicaid residents over the months, and that really hasn't changed. On a financial basis, despite the fact that we had a low census, almost unprecedented low census for the month, and I'm turning to page 46, our net loss in the month of October was $6,959. So I wrote in there, that's a minor victory that we basically broke even for the month. Cash flow from operations after adding back depreciation was a positive $52,000. on a year-to-date basis, our net income is $81,000 to the good, and our year-to-date cash from operations is a positive $692,000.
So how did we just lose $7,000? Strangely, you would think that it would have been higher. Was it that more money just flowed in accidentally? It was a strange phenomena, or what? How did we, because if you could figure out how to protect yourself during lean times, that would be really very helpful. Or was it just something that you stepped in?
Well, it's basically controlling our expenses as much as we can. So our wages, direct wages dropped from $455,000 to $409,000 between September and October. So our wages per day fell from $86.18 to $76.55. So that, obviously, that takes into account the census. So non-labor expenses actually went up a little bit, but the increase in our non-labor expenses per day was only a couple of bucks, so basically $2.25. So, and our year-to-date average non-labor expenses is $97.16 compared to our average in 2014, which was up a little bit at $97.61. So we've been able to maintain our expenses in relation to our census pretty well. So meaning that if our census is down, we're spending.
But your only flexibility and as a general rule in your labor is utilization of PRN type resources, or just you had separations and you lucked out that month because you didn't have to pay a few salaries?
Well, the one thing that we did luck out on is that when we closed down Unit 4 to make the renovations,
you could reassign people and you didn't need as many staff for a smaller number of units.
Right, so we did it right at the same time where census was down. So again, that was not done because the census was down, but it was perfect timing.
Gotcha.
So that definitely helped, without question. Turning to page 47, our cash position. At the end of October, our cash balance was $237,000. Our November cash balance will be basically the same. We did issue the tax anticipation warrants earlier this month, so we have a cash infusion of roughly $1 million. I think it was just, I can't remember, it was just under $1 million. But our current cash balance, again, this is as of last week, was $1.276 million. So accounts receivable was up a little bit from $4.4 million to $4.5 million between September and October. Our accounts payable, basically no change. $1.589 million in September. I'm sorry, $1.589 million in October, and it was $1.586 million in September. But the best way to look at accounts payable is we're basically current with all of our vendors, roughly between 30 to 60 days out.
What's the reason for the increase in the AR?
It's just, I don't have the detail with me, but it was pretty much normal fluctuation. I know our private pay receivables was down, which was a positive thing, but I think it was just a mix between, and roughly timing between Medicaid and Medicare payments. Caused that increase. And just an update, the biggest issue that we had earlier this year with our receivables was getting paid by Molina and Health Alliance Connect. And so both Molina is basically under 60 days. Health Alliance Connect was our big problematic area, and we are roughly at about somewhere between 60 and 90 days out. But those claims are a lot, I'm going to call it, not as clean, because we have scattered claims that are more than 120 days out. But in terms of a cash basis, we've gotten those receivables down to less than 90 days. So there's still more cleanup that needs to be done, but we've made significant strides. Because again, we haven't been paid for many months by both of those payers, and we've got the systems in place with both. But again, with Health Alliance Connect, once we get those paid, Health Alliance Connect as of January 1st is no longer going to be participating in the Dual Eligible Managed Care Program. And so we have roughly 20 to 25 of our residents that are currently with Health Alliance Connect. So the option for those residents are they've received letters from Health Alliance Connect, is basically three options. They can sign up with Molina, they can go back to traditional Medicare and Medicaid, or they can go to a Medicare Advantage plan and traditional Medicaid. But I believe, and I have actually followed up on this, but probably most of those residents will go to traditional Medicare and Medicaid. So again, they are not going to lose coverage. It's just a matter of getting them converted over to one of the other options. But again, the majority of them will probably end up with traditional Medicare and Medicaid. And as far as we know, we haven't heard anything from the state that another health plan is coming into the market. So moving forward, as of January 1st, Molina will be the only dual-eligible managed care product in the area.
Molina is neither of the clinics will see Molina patients.
The biggest problem with Molina is their provider network was very, very small compared to Health Alliances. So,
okay.
What's the default? The default is Medicare or Medicaid, right?
Traditional Medicaid.
So, okay.
When they had two choices in the marketplace, the state was going to passively enroll everyone into one of the two plans. But because there's only one plan available, my understanding is passive enrollment will not take place.
Okay.
So, I mean, basically the state can't force everyone just into one plan.
Especially, I think, if they don't really have in-network access to the two hospitals. So I think that's a challenge. Okay.
They have access to a hospital. They don't have access to doctors.
Yeah.
Okay, any questions on the management report? You already talked about the revenue anticipation notes, really.
Well, we'll segue into that. So, issue with obviously with the revenue anticipation notes is that all the information I continue to hear, and as of last week, is that with the state budget impasse, the probability of a Medicaid payment slowdown is very high. But again, what we don't know is when it will take place and for what length of time that payment delay will be. So the need to preserve our Medicaid cash flow is going to be necessary because we're talking roughly $300,000 a month in Medicaid payments that we have to continue to have. The only vehicle that we have to borrow against those Medicaid receivables is the revenue anticipation notes. So the RANs were presented to the Finance Committee of the Whole last week and was approved, and with County Board approval for the revenue anticipation notes, we will start shopping or testing the waters with local and regional lenders to see if there's any interest in the revenue anticipation notes. Now, the big caveat with the RANs is that we are not requiring county to guarantee or to support the revenue anticipation notes. The only collateral for the revenue anticipation notes is the Medicaid receivables. So, but the big question is whether any lending institutions will be interested, because in 2011 we had one lender, and that was Citibank out of Chicago, that was interested in talking to us. So we don't know until we start talking with the lenders whether it be any interest. The hope is that we will have multiple lenders that are interested in the RANs, and then if that's the case, what we'll do is we'll put this on the shelf until we get a payment delay. The RANs will be issued in 2-month increments, so we have to wait at least 2 months before we would issue the first RAN. When we did the cash flow analysis that was presented to you previously and also to the county board, we identified that we could actually weather a 3-month payment delay without issuing the RANs. So from a practical standpoint, we probably wouldn't send out the RFP until we had some indication that the payment delay would be longer than 3 months. But what will happen is the county board treasurer will issue an RFP for the revenue anticipation notes, and that's how we would award the RANs to a particular lender. So the hope is that we will know that we will have interest by multiple lenders, We'll publicize the RFP, but also send it directly to those interested lending institutions. And then when we need it, that's when we issue. But the stipulations in the RAND documents are is that we have to have a Medicaid payment delay. So we, even with county board approval, the nursing home won't be, we can't just issue the RANDs now. We have to wait for a payment delay. That's the trigger before the RANDs can be issued. So again, there's a lot of question marks because, again, I can't tell you when or it's going to happen for what length of time. But we want to be able to reach out to the lenders well in advance of needing it and not having to do this at the 11th hour. And that's the reason why we went to the county board now as opposed to later.
Any questions on the revenue anticipation notes?
You don't have to send, you can send the RFP out prior to.
Right.
Right.
Going to go ahead and do the RFP, right?
No, no.
Oh, you won't even do the RFP until we have like 3 months of unpaid?
Right, because the we actually have to have a document from the state that says that, you know, this is what you would have been paid for. Let's say it starts in March. We would have paid you $200,000 in March. We call that a prepayment.
So that's sort of your version of collateral.
An invoice.
Yeah. And that, yeah, that, that's what your lenders would be looking for. If you put out the RFP without that, they would say, well, what collateral would you offer?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I got you.
Is the
If you have to wait till your 2 months, know that you've got a 2 month delay, and just then issue the RFP and wait for the responses.
Yes, yes.
You gotta get close.
But those can be turned around in a week.
Oh, can they?
Yeah, pretty
quick.
Okay. Is the interest structure on those? What's the tip? Are they pretty conventional in terms of
that's
current
not, rates? We are assuming. 5%. We have really no idea what it's going to be, but we hopefully it's going to be under 5%.
It's sort
the way
of
the
RAND market.
Was adopted, it has to be 5% or less. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it will have to go back to the county.
Right. Okay. And again, that's basically an educated assumption on what potential interest rate. I mean, that's talking with bond counsel and their knowledge of the marketplace of what would be a conservative number present to the county board. So as Deb said, if it happens to be more than 5%, we're going to have to go back to the county board. The RAND also assumes a 6 month payment delay. So if it turns out that it's longer than a 6 month payment delay, and again, the RAND document says that we can borrow at the most an aggregate of $4.9 million over the course of the payment delay. If the payment delay is longer than we anticipate, we will have to go back to county board for additional approval over the amount. So right now we're assuming a 6 month payment delay, a maximum interest rate of 5%. So if any of those parameters are not accurate, we would have to go back to the board for additional approval.
Any other questions?
And the actual outstanding loan amount is more like 1.2 million, right? 1.19 million.
Yes. So.
And so what you're doing is you're continuously borrowing and paying it. So don't think that we would be out $4.8 million at any one time. It's over the period of the RANDs, the total would be $4.8 million. Because as soon as you, you know, use up the 1.2 and you get a payment, you're repaying it, but then you're borrowing again because you need the cash for the operation.
So the assumptions are a 6 month payment delay. So on month 7, the state starts making a monthly payment. So if we assume that we're out $200,000 each month, the state will start paying $200,000 in month 7. But we're still delayed, we're still out 6 months. So when we get paid that $200,000, the RAND document says that that money has to go back to pay off the first RAND that was issued. Or so that means that we don't have any cash available for operations. So we would have to continue to borrow RANDs until such time that the state starts making catch-up payments. So if we are assuming that the state won't start catching up for 12 months after they start making their first payment. So Month seven, we go another 12 months, and then the state starts making double payments every few months. So we're assuming actually we won't get cut back up to within 30 or 60 days for actually another year. And so that's why the aggregate amount that we're borrowing is 4.9 million. But on any given time, we are only borrowing the equivalent of 6 months.
Okay.
2 million. So.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Any other questions? Okay. Want to talk about the comprehensive care for joint replacement program, bundle payments?
So this is what I call the big picture. One of the issues that's driving the strategic positioning of this nursing home. And so if you would turn to page 72 to 73, and I also included an article that starts on page 75 about bundled payments. So what's been going on over the last few years with the passage of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, one of the things that really doesn't get talked about in the media is the fact that there have been a number of demonstration programs that CMS has been putting into place because of the Affordable Care Act. And what I've talked about before is basically Medicare is moving away from traditional fee-for-service payments. And their goal is, based on what they talked about in the press conference earlier in 2015, they are actively moving away from fee-for-service payment. So either it's going to be affordable care organizations, bundled payments, or if it's a fee-for-service payment, the fee-for-service payments will be tied to quality measures. So if the quality measure is substandard, you're not going to receive your full fee-for-service payment. And so, you know, within the next 5 years, we're going to see all these, we're already seeing these demonstration programs, but eventually, over the next 5 to 10 years, traditional fee-for-service is no longer going to be around. CMS's Comprehensive Care for Joint Replacement Program is going to start in April of next year in 67 markets across the country. This will not affect Champaign County in April, but one of the markets is Decatur, Illinois. And what is significant about this is this program is not a demonstration program where if you're a healthcare provider, an ACO, that you actually respond and try to be a participant in this program. If you're in the Decatur market, you will be paid under a bundled payment program. And so the way this works, this is specifically for knee and hip joint replacements or surgeries. And the reason why CMS picked this is the highest volume services that are provided to the Medicare recipients across the country. So I think it's the largest DRGs that's paid to hospitals. The way bundled payment, the program will work is that the hospital will be financially at risk for all the services and costs provided from the day of admission to 90 days post-discharge from the hospital. That 90-day post-discharge includes services that are paid to either home health agencies, nursing homes, as well as doctors or any hospital-related outpatient costs. So that means the biggest cost at that 90 days is for nursing homes. So CMS is going to develop specific targets for what they believe a joint replacement should be paid for, less automatic savings. There will be quality incentives for the hospitals if they meet certain quality measure targets. But because of the financial incentives for the hospitals will now be financially incentivized to be selective on which nursing homes and home health agencies they will send their referrals to. So what this means for us, and again, we are not going to be participating in this as of April, but I think without question, CMS will expand this to other markets, if not all markets across the country, if they see positive improvements in costs as well as outcomes. All the things that we've been doing in working with the hospitals to reduce readmissions, to try to control or link the state. Because again, we're already doing this with Medicare Advantage programs and also with the MMAI programs. Medicare covers up to 100 days of skilled nursing care after a hospitalization. Now keep in mind that this program is covering services from date of admission to 90 days post hospitalization. So they're already lopping off 10 days. So that's guaranteed, if you want to call it guaranteed potential savings or a ceiling right there. But what the hospitals are going to be looking at is our ability to rehab these joint or these orthopedic cases with the smallest or the shortest length of stay with the best outcomes compared to other nursing homes. So that means that we have to work closely with our physicians, our nursing staff, but also our rehab provider, because our incentive before, if you call it an incentive, is to try to maintain the longest length of stay. Because obviously, the longer length of stay, the more we get paid. Now, our incentive is to reduce our length of stay with good outcomes. That means that the hospitals will send us more referrals. So again, everything that we've been doing up to date, because we've been working on our readmission program, obviously we've been working closely with Carl and their physicians. We're going to be doing the same thing with Christy and Dr. McNeil, and the same thing with Dr. Sheik with the cardiopulmonary. All of those things are similar to what we need to be doing. We've been starting to have discussions with Dr. McNeil, who is our Christy rehab director, to start working on protocols with nursing and rehab on how we're going to treat hips and knees. So again, even though we're not participating in this program right now, we want to get our program in place so that we can be successful once this starts hitting the road here in town. The article that you have,
Scott, what's our current percentage of CJR services right now in the mix?
Do you have an idea? We'd have to take a look, because I haven't done that breakdown just yet in what it is. But, you know, in general, the orthopedic is the highest percentage of any nursing home's Medicare program. So again, you know, the writing's on the wall. You know, they're going to start with the hips and the knees, but basically all the orthopedic issues are going this way without question. So
now, if we were bundled, it would be a fixed payment, or for us, a certain
fixed payment to the hospital.
No, I realize that, but
and what then you're contracting with the hospital for what you'll get paid. Yep. It depends on what the contract with the hospital is. The contract could say we're only going to pay you this much, or the contract with the hospital could be we're going to pay you so much per day. It would vary per hospital, probably per plan. But you're right, the writing is on the wall, because at the same time that Medicare is doing this, they have a quality metric for hospitals that says what percentage of your joint patients did you discharge to home? Because they're moving to get as many joint replacement patients as possible discharged from the hospital to home, which is a very different approach than just 3 or 4 years ago, really. So not only will there be an emphasis on shorter length of stay with and quality outcomes, it's not just short length of stay, but there will also be the same incentive of hospitals to have. They have to show the same outcomes or better, but they're really supposed to show a higher percentage of patients discharged to home. So the whole industry, which I think is what you're trying to point out, is going to have a shift in terms of the number of Medicare patients. And as you say, they're going to start with joints, but then they're going to go right down the line of any Medicare patients that they see having a long length of stay after a hospital discharge. They're going to be looking at how can they reduce those.
So the link with our outpatient therapy program fits right into this.
Yes.
So we're much more aggressive on our inpatient rehab. We send them home. It's not going to surprise me that they're still going to need rehab at home. Well, now we've got that continuity of care that they can come back to us on an outpatient basis. We've reduced our inpatient length of stay, but can continue that care when they go back home. Because the main thing the hospital wants to see is that patient doesn't end up going back to the hospital. So we have to make sure that our outcomes are good, because otherwise, if we keep messing up, they're going to start sending those cases to the other nursing homes in town. So, but by having those components, I think it really sets us up to be very successful. but we've got to get those protocols in place. And we can't do that alone. We have to do that in conjunction with consultation from the doctors to make sure that we're rehabbing these patients the way that they want to see them rehab.
Looking forward, say, 5 years, with this, with the feds looking to basically get people out of the nursing homes as quick as possible and not returning to the hospitals, could we anticipate a reduction in our residency? And that being the case, then how do we pay all our overhead? Are we going to be looking at potentially shutting down, you know, one of the units? I'm just looking ahead.
Industry is going to be looking at less days in general. Yeah. And the only thing that's balancing that is the demographics.
Right. That's the other part. So you've got more people that you're taking care of. So
right. The boomers are coming in. So
right.
We
right.
have to deal with them.
Right.
How are your knees?
Good.
Good. There you go.
Well, maybe in 5 years now. But
you're right. You've got both those forces. There's no question that in the short term, you're looking at a reduction in days in nursing homes overall, but you're balancing that with more people needing restorative care.
Right.
And that's why we have to be as progressive as we can to meet these changing needs so that we will continue to get those referrals. So without question, everything that you see from what the state is doing with the MMAI program, what CMS is doing, they want patients cared for at the lowest level possible. So that means, but there's always going to be, the highest cost is the hospital. So they want to get them out of the hospital as quickly as possible. Not everyone can go home. You're still going to need people in a nursing home. So we want to be able to capture as much of that piece as possible. But without question, anyone that the hospital can send directly to home, they're going to do. So without question, the incentive is to empty out the nursing home beds as much as possible.
But the hospitals have the same issue, that they,
right.
they want them to go home, but they've got to have them go home healthy with good outcomes, or else the patient's going to end
they
up back in
up.
The hospital,
yeah.
and that's even worse. So that they, if they can't show the good outcomes, I mean, that's the nice thing about the way Medicare is setting up. They're not just saying, we want to see your days reduced. They're saying, we want to see your days reduced and your outcomes improved. So everybody's sort of got the same incentive to keep people healthier, which is a little bit different than we used to have.
Yeah, because under the big change with hospitals was DRGs, which is you got paid a fixed rate no matter how long or short, you know. So, you know, open heart surgeries, you know, went from 2 weeks to a few days, you know, literally overnight. But there was no quality incentives built into that. So, you know, the hospitals were just sending people home as quickly as possible, but they kept coming back. And that's the big difference. So, but again, incentives are still the same. They want them out of the hospital, they want them out of the nursing home as much as possible, and they want to keep them at home.
Which is all a good thing.
Yep.
Okay.
Just a little bit of what we have to look forward to, right? So, team steps, is that something you're going to talk about, Karen? Or is, no? We've been working in a collaborative with the QIO, which is our quality oversight, on a project to bring team steps here to train the staff to communicate better, to reduce complaints. And we've been working on that project for a while now. It's something we've introduced to our preceptors, and we're going to try and take it to the next level to try and increase our opportunities to improve communication, because we hear that a lot. The communication is a problem. So we continue to work. We have worked on this, providing them data. We've been working with a specific unit on improvement to see if we can reduce complaints, but now we're going to take it the next step and include our preceptors and try and take it to the rest of the building to see what we can do about communication improvements with these different skills that they will gain from this training.
Is that training for CNAs or all of nursing staff, or
any level of staff?
Okay.
Not just nursing.
Not just nursing.
Right.
and as I put in the write-up, so this is a program that was developed by the Department of Defense in collaboration with the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. So the Research and Quality Organization is kind of the national quality improvement organization. And so Telegen is the Illinois Quality Improvement Organization. So they work with providers, including nursing homes across the state, to try to improve quality care. So they reached out to us to participate in this program. So basically, they provided free training for this Team Steps program. And the best way I can characterize this is it teaches all staff to follow through with issues. So, you know, if a resident or a family member goes to a housekeeper and says, you know, I've got this issue, or, you know, the housekeeper notices that the resident doesn't look right, even though it's a housekeeper, you know, we're teaching every employee, including the housekeeper, to follow through and communicate their concerns on any level with the appropriate individual, whether it's going to their supervisor or going directly to Karen. And if there's no follow-through or feedback, don't just forget about it, but follow back and say, you know, I talked to you a couple days ago about this issue. You know, has anything been done? We're trying to empower every level of staff to follow through with these issues and not just hand it off and walk away from it. Because that's a lot of the problems that we have, or that, you know, and it's not just us. Nursing home, hospitals always have is the follow-through of individual issues or complaints. And we have to make sure that these are followed through on as much as possible. So this is an education program for all staff to get that type of mentality to have throughout the facility.
So it's essentially a training program.
Sorry, it's actually a project they've taken on that they are going to have to represent and present.
So do they come back and say, do they do any evaluation as well, or do they?
Yes, they will.
Okay.
I mean, they've been evaluating. We utilize our concern logs and communication with families to provide that data.
So is there like a head of this project? You said it's a project, so is there like a coordinator, or who's responsible for?
There is a person at Telegen that's coordinating with us here at the facility.
Okay. Who's responsible here?
There's a group. There was a core group of trainers. I was one of them. Josh, our compliance officer. Kenna, one of our MDS coordinators, and our activity director, and she's now not, but they train four people.
So in 6 months or in a year, when we do an evaluation as to the success of this and it's working or not working, who do we turn to say, okay, here's the accountability?
Right. And as we work with Telegen, they're providing us that type of feedback on the processes.
So Telegen is responsible for this, not us?
No, we're responsible here on site, but they're working with us on resolution. Implementing.
Who on site then?
It's that core group, the trainers.
So it's a group.
Okay. And who pays them?
Telegen. They're contracted with CMS.
CMS is paying them.
Mm-hmm. They have different scopes of practice, things they work on every year.
It's the hot issue these days. Federal government actually used it mostly in the military, and then it has sort of spread. The Association for Healthcare Improvement has sort of picked it up. They're pushing it out. The beauty is that much of it is actually pretty inexpensive, right? Mm-hmm. That the federal government sort of pushes out these tools. Mm-hmm. And if I don't know your organization or Telegen, but typically, they would be coming here to teach you some of the easy tools that might be so-called low-hanging fruit. Then you try to figure out how to use the tools, create a metric that sort of fits with whatever project in the Team Steps toolkit you picked up. And sort of once you have a few successes, you pick up other tools, because they push out a lot of tools.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. And it's new to long-term care, and they've updated the modules to reflect long-term care.
So are they doing this with other nursing homes in the area?
They offered it, and some people initially, but then they didn't follow through. So we're it. They're getting picked for this.
So are you doing CUS? Is that one of the CUS tool?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Used to love that acronym.
Yeah.
Lots of acronyms.
Yeah.
So to Sam's point, what's sort of the time frame for looking at what you think of it?
We have, for the big project at large, Telegen, what they're expecting to accomplish with this project. I have not been given a date certain. I know they have to get their materials ready for their presentation next year. But we have been doing quick change cycles internally and working on projects internally that we have.
So if they are giving you sort of new training and new tools, at what point would you be able to say, okay, we think this is good or it's not good, or we're going to implement it more fully?
And really, they're not giving us tools at this point. That was all done. Now we're just providing data back to them based on our performance and utilization of the tools.
Okay. So you're evaluating it right now.
Right.
Okay. So you have your metrics picked.
Okay.
Telegen determined those. Okay. And they're trying to reduce... They want to see if implementation of team steps is going to reduce concerns and complaints. And really the focus is on public health complaints.
Okay.
So can you bring us back an update on it at some point?
Sure.
Say whether or not you think there's any good?
I mean, the tools have definitely helped.
Have they? Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on that one? Employee recognition?
So
got a list?
Yep, so I included a list on page 74 of all the employees that were recognized for their user service, plus four employees that retired in 2015, and take a look at that on page 74. So minimum of 5 years of service, and Lori Campbell, our assistant director of nursing, has been with us for 30 years.
Hmm. In that same position?
No, she's gone through the ranks.
What'd she start out as?
An RN. They were recognized during our residents' Christmas tea last week.
Thank you, Mary.
I am retired,
you know.
Not so much.
So much. That's true. I'm here about 3 days a week.
Shuffle the entertainment.
Yeah.
Well, keep them on track.
What was the turnout?
We had a good, I don't know numbers, but it was good.
Whole dining room. It always is. Thanks, Mary.
It was fun.
Okay. Calendar of meetings is attached. I think it's 79. Yeah, page 79. It's just for information, right?
No, it needs to be.
We've got to have it be approved. Okay.
So you're looking for a motion?
Yep.
I move we adopt the proposed calendar for Board of Directors meeting for 2016.
I would second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passed. Okay, so the next meeting date and time is January 11th at 6 p.m.
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
The officers of the auxiliary have officially signed the paperwork to have our charitable donations, the ones that come directly through the auxiliary, go to the East Central Illinois Community Foundation. And so when people are making donations to the auxiliary, they'll be making their well, hopefully they'll be making out checks, but they would be making out checks to the community foundation.
Oh, so the community foundation is handling the
funds? Yes, they will handle it, and then but they'll put in the memo that it's for the nursing home.
Okay.
And the reason we did that was because, although some donations come directly to the nursing home and are just made out to the nursing home, but we solicit donations too normally. But we had lost our federal 501(c)(3) status because we had not, we didn't have the people to do the paperwork every year.
Yeah.
So this way, all donations will be deductible both on the state and the federal.
That's probably a good deal.
So distribution of those funds from the foundation, is that just a request?
Our auxiliary meets regularly, and then we always prioritize requests, but the requests come from the departments. Typically, the department heads will say what they feel they need. You know, obviously, some requests would be too large for us to handle, but smaller requests we handle, and we do a lot of things for activities. The auxiliary pays, for example, for all the prizes for bingo, and we've purchased things like the furniture that's out in the courtyard and the popcorn machine. And, you know, over the years, a lot of things for the beauty shop and the dental clinic, you know, little things that enhance the quality of life for the residents.
It's just a matter of requesting to the foundation.
Yes, and then
we don't have to worry about that.
No, our auxiliary board will vote on how the money will be spent. And we've got in our agreement with the community foundation, we had to provide for contingencies such as termination of the auxiliary due to, like, I'm the youngest one and I'm 65, you know, or I'm one of the younger ones, you know. So
you're a youngster.
So if we didn't have an auxiliary anymore, what would happen? Or if the nursing home, for example, would be sold, then our funds could not be used for the nursing home because this would be a for-profit facility. So the way we set up the language was that it would be, if that were ever to happen, it would be at the discretion of the community foundation, and their board could accept grant proposals or requests to assist people. Typically, it would have to be seniors, could be in a nursing home or in their own home or whatever, but they understand the type of things that we prefer the funds to be used for. So that would only occur in the case of if the nursing home would be sold, however.
Good stewardship.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a good one. And at most boards, I realize we're not a fundraising board, but at most boards, meaning boards this time of year, we would say, okay, and board members might want to be considering for the end of the year.
And we have not been soliciting recently because we knew we didn't have the 501(c)(3) status, so we'll be a little bit more active in that in the future, and we intend to put our, you know, articles in the newsletter, and
so
hopefully
you should twist the arms of the board members here.
Hey, Community Foundation,
right? Yeah.
CCNH Auxiliary,
right?
But the nice thing too is the Community Foundation will help you develop your brochure. And so I hope to work with, I know they've been developing a brochure here for the new unit, and George Maya has worked, given them a lot of ideas for that, and I hope to maybe piggyback on that and develop a brochure for the auxiliary. And then admissions has agreed that they could put that in the welcome packet, welcome bag that goes to all new residents, and, you know, it would solicit for membership for the auxiliary, but it could also solicit for volunteers, mm-hmm. but also solicit possible donations or memorials as well. So that's what we're looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
might take a little while to get all done, but that's our
A good start, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Yes.
Okay. Do I
have another motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Or adjourn.